Hi, my name is Ellen, and I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen since January 24th, 1990. And I only remember that exact date because it was my first wedding anniversary, and I was angry and resentful and spiting my husband at the time. So it has been emblazoned in my mind, that exact date, and you know, I've been able to flip that from being a painful remembrance to a beautiful remembrance because now it's my Al-Anon birthday, and I really have grown up here. That's the bottom line for me in this beautiful program. I'm not a big reader, and I'm not going to read to you exactly, but I am going to talk about the logo that we have. We have this great triangle with the circle in the middle. So, you know, I'm always curious about what do things mean, what do they represent. And early on, I heard that each side of the triangle represented the steps, the traditions, and the concepts. And without all three legacies, you have like a three-legged stool that you can't sit upon. So you don't really get the full benefit of what this beautiful program has to offer if you don't avail yourself of all three of the legacies. And that has been my Al-Anon experience growing up. And they talk about it in our Path to Recovery. And I think for anybody who does not really understand the purpose of the concepts and the traditions, it's worth reading up on them and trying to understand how they work not only in our Al-Anon life in the rooms, but for me, it works in all my affairs. You know, it's not just me finding out about who I am through the steps, but how do I interact with others in the world is very, very important. And that's, for me, the traditions and the concepts help me with that. And the circle in the middle is the hope and the unity of the people in the rooms and the message that we have to offer one another. And it's really a powerful symbol. You know, the triangle, we talk about our service structure as being an upside-down triangle because the groups being the most important and WSO, although they may be at the top, are not so important. They're servants. They're our servants. And so it's important to remember without that strong foundation of the groups, it doesn't matter if we have we won't have WSO. But whatever they do won't have any impact because they won't know what to do. We tell them what we would like them to do, what we want them to consider, what we think needs to be talked about in Al-Anon. So it's really all these things that I learned doing service in Al-Anon. So how did I get into service? I was manipulated by my first home group. You know, I came in here, I said that I was very angry about my marriage and, you know, we were fighting. We fought. We were married 17 years and I would say 14 of them were like a solid fight, a little breathing in between, but mostly we were just fighting. Never had a loving word to share. I'm speaking for myself. I never said anything kind. I was critical. I was angry. But I wasn't going anywhere. I was going to change them. I saw the potential. Somebody shared about potential the other night, and I had to laugh because that's my middle name. I see the potential in people. And if only they would take my direction, it would all be great. So I didn't know what to do with myself. I walked into the meeting. I didn't come in, you know. He was already in AA for a little while. I'm spiting him, so now I'm here. What am I supposed to do? I don't even know. People seemed like they had an idea of what was going on, and I needed something to do. I needed to feel like I belonged, I could be busy, something. So I took it upon myself to start, you know, with the cleaning up. After the meeting, I got that. I saw people doing this. I could do this. So it must have been written across my forehead, you know, she's ripe. You could get her easy. So within that first year, I was encouraged to become a group rep, which I had no idea what a group rep was. And they said, even though you're supposed to be around for 2 or 3 years, we can make an exception because we think that you'd be really good at this. So I talked to my sponsor, who I had just gotten, and she said she had never done any service above the group. But she said, I think that you would be really good because you seem like you like to learn things, you like to study, every book I was buying, everything that they had. And so I did that. And it's so interesting to me that here I had this sponsor who was helping me so much in my personal life who could not help me at all in the service life because she had no experience. But she pushed me through that door. And I took that commitment as group rep. And she did go with me the first assembly meeting. Now, I'm from New York, so we used to have our assemblies like around town. Sometimes they'd be out in Long Island. Sometimes they'd be up in Woodstock area. They could be anywhere. And this first one that I went to was out in Long Island somewhere. I don't remember exactly what town. And we drove like 2 hours in traffic, bumper to bumper, to get there. And I'm like, why are we doing this? Why? Especially her. She was just keeping me company. But, you know, I went. I was very intimidated. Everyone was very loud. They had strong opinions. They're like, I felt like I was, you know, with that first husband. He was very opinionated. But I wasn't being my mouthy self. I was being like very shy and quiet and kind of cowering. I felt intimidated by these men and women in this meeting who knew so much. They were quoting, you know, pulling out their service manuals, and they had them earmarked and highlighted and tagged. And, you know, an issue came up and they said, at page 195 right here it says. I'm like, I can't even imagine this. It was very scary, and I thought, I'm not doing this. But just like with that marriage, that first marriage, I'm a stick-to-it kind of person. So I couldn't say no now that I said yes. And they said it's 3 years. And I'm like, all right. And I just stayed with it. And it really has been the single best thing that I've done. Outside of staying in Al-Anon, you know, in general, doing service and staying in service all these years has been priceless, absolutely priceless for me. I came in here, I said that I was mouthy at home, but I was not mouthy in the world. So I was in a job for 17 years that I absolutely hated, but I was afraid to leave. Because he was never working, I had to work. And sometimes I had two or three jobs because he was not, you know, he was unemployable. His alcoholism took him to places that he just really couldn't hold a job. So I was uber responsible. And, you know, how could I leave? And in Al-Anon, so now I'm in Al-Anon, the tail end of this job, and I'm hating every minute of it because I'm feeling like I'm better than this job. I could be somebody. Meantime, I had dropped out of school to marry this individual and, you know, threw away a scholarship, all these things, but I was better than this job that I had kept, you know, a house for me to live in and food to eat and all this good stuff I couldn't see. I had no gratitude. I just really wanted to leave. I wanted to get out of it. So I learned in Al-Anon that you don't have to stay anywhere. You don't have to stay in a job. You don't have to stay in a marriage. You don't have to stay in a room. You don't have to, you know, you could go. You could do something else. You could choose again. My sponsor was famous for saying, choose again. You know, you chose that. Now you're going to choose something else. And so I did choose again, and I left that job, and I finished up a degree that I had been playing around with forever. And I had only like 3 months left to my final semester for this degree, and I just looked at my husband at the time, and I said, you got to go. You got to go. I could not take it one more second. I had detached myself so much. And I had been so deeply enmeshed in Al-Anon service because it kept me sane. It kept me out of the fights. It gave me an ability to detach from whatever he was doing. But I just had this epiphany one morning when he was screaming at me like this, you gotta go. You gotta go. And I felt a spiritual touch, and I heard a voice that said, it's time. And I all those years that we were together, all the crazy stuff, I never once said, you got to go. I always said, you got to get a job. You got to come home. You got to monitor your drinking. You have to do this. But I never once said, you got to go. So he was speechless. Probably the first and last time I ever saw him speechless. And he did eventually leave. And my sponsor was like, you couldn't hang on like another 3 months. You know, you're not working because you left the job because now you want to finish your degree. And I said, no, I could not. It was just time for me. It was a spiritual moment. And it all worked out. You know, I did things. I always say, I hate to clean. I do hate to clean. Even today, I hate to clean. I love a clean house, but I hate doing the work. So what did I do for those, you know, that period of time in between graduating and finishing this degree? I cleaned houses. And I used to, in order to find, like, the positives in it, and all these things I learned from you guys doing service, you know, that you could flip it around. You don't have to look at something and it's all doom and gloom. Just, you know, tilt your head and you see something beautiful on the other side. So what a gift. And so I used to walk out of people's houses backwards. So I would step out and I say, all right, God, this is what they're going to see when they walk in. And this is for you. I was not doing that before that. I did not understand that the things that I was doing in my life were for my higher power. I dumped God years ago. And so that was a gift of Al-Anon and a gift of service, that I got this relationship with the higher power that did not exist for me before. And I didn't come into any of this with the intention of sticking around, doing service. The God thing was not on my bucket list at all. And all of this, you know, just kept coming. I've had amazing experiences in service. One of the service positions I accepted was, years ago they used to have these service seminars that were full weekends, and WSO, you know, they would handle it to a certain degree, but the local area had to find the place and do all the arranging, and then, you know, WSO would come in and run the workshops. So I was going to do one in New York. I don't know how. I think my service sponsor manipulated me into sticking my hand up and volunteering for that position. But we were sent to Cleveland, Ohio, the two of us, because she was my co-chair for that committee, to experience, you know, a service seminar and see how they did it, ask questions, all this kind of stuff. And I have to tell you, the laughs that we had on the trip there and the trip back and while we were there, I mean, you can't make this stuff up, what happens. We got caught in a flash, like tornado kind of thing. We were out doing some, we weren't supposed to leave because her mom was with us. She was a delegate. And she said, don't you guys leave. You're supposed to stay here. You're supposed to experience this weekend, get information. So we snuck out at lunchtime to go, I don't know where we're going, in Cleveland. There was something to see. And they had this storm, this freak storm came up. And I looked at her and I'm like, your mother's going to kill us. She's going to kill us because now we can't get back. The place is flooded. The train is at a standstill. And we don't have an umbrella. We got nothing. We're drowned rats. It took us 2 hours to get back to the seminar. And, you know, we're hysterical. We're finding the humor in all this. Mom is not. When we come back, she was very angry at us. But I could never laugh. And service, it's so strange that you learn to laugh in service. And I have had great times with this. She's still my service sponsor today. And she has moved out of state, but we still... You know, she drags me through kicking and screaming the concepts every year. I'm a little behind because I changed jobs again, finished another degree, switched jobs, and all because of service. Because you guys tell me it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you want to do something else, you could do it. And that's been true in all my affairs. So, you know, I went back to school yet again, got a different degree, new job. And I remember when I was in that graduate school, somebody said to me, a non-Al-Anon person said, why are you doing this? You know, you're heading towards retirement, which was a little insulting, but true. Why are you bothering? You know, you're going to all this work, you know, you're working full time, you're going to school, you know, it's just too much. I don't understand why you're even bothering. And I just looked at them and I had to laugh and I said, because I really love to learn. I love to learn. And if I never work a day with this degree, I don't even care because it's the process. And I learned that in service, that I may be in a job doing some service to Al-Anon and not understanding how I got there, why I'm there, what the heck I'm doing, but there's something for me to learn. It has transformed me. I've had so many opportunities that would not have come to me if I was not in service. I wouldn't be standing here. First of all, my ego says the room should be filled, but I knew it was service, so it wasn't going to be filled, which is God's way of keeping me right-sized. And I don't like speaking. And what I learned in service work is that if I do only what I like to do, I'm not going to do much. I'll go to an occasional meeting. Maybe I'll go to a share a day, la, la, la. I'm certainly not coming all the way to Atlanta or Toronto or Vancouver or Baltimore in a couple of years or Detroit down the road. I wouldn't do any of that. No way. No way. But because I've been involved in service from the get-go, really from the get-go, I've had these great opportunities. And it's changed my life. I can stand here and share with you my experience, Strength and Hope, with service and say that everything that I have done has changed who I am. You know, and there's not enough time for me. I have no idea how long I'm speaking right now. Okay. So my story is one of growing up. Like I said, I grew up in this program. My mom died when I was young. So I went from being a teenager to being an adult, just like in a couple of days. She was not diagnosed with pancreatic cancer until very late. So she was gone. Like, she got the diagnosis 2 weeks later. We were burying her. And I was a kid. So angry, pissed off. And, you know, now I'm her because I'm taking over. There's seven of us. I'm the oldest home. And I'm taking care of everybody like I'm mom. So coming into Al-Anon, well, you know, this stuff doesn't go away. It just gets buried, really, for me, very deep. So after the group rep position, I went to Alateen, another manipulation by people in my home group. They thought I would be good working with teens, and I was much younger. So I think it's important that, for me, that the teens had some way of identifying. So what happened there is that I learned more about me. I hope they got something from whatever I had to offer. It's different now. Now I'm an Alateen coordinator for the state, for New York South, and we have background checks and all this kind of stuff. Back in the day, if you were willing and you said yes, you were an Alateen sponsor. But I got to heal all that pain of my missed childhood with those teens, listening to them, watching them, sharing about feelings. I was blown away. It's still my favorite commitment, which is why this is my second go-around with this Alateen coordinator. I just really love the teens. There's so much hope with them. But they taught me how to play, not to take myself so very seriously, how to laugh at me. You know, I wanted you to think of me in a certain way, especially in the early days. Now I don't care so much. But back then, I wanted you to think that, you know, I was well-read in the Al-Anon principles, and I'm going to really pontificate so well that you're going to be captivated by everything I have to say. And it's interesting because now when I speak, I don't prepare. My preparation is prayer and meditation, which I learned also from you guys. I don't have an original thought to share with you. I can only share what has been shared with me, what I have read in the literature, what I have experienced, what I've witnessed with people in recovery. And the people who I'm closest to are in service. That's the bottom line. I feel connected. I feel like there's this camaraderie and this brotherhood that does not exist even in the rooms of Al-Anon, if that's all I had. You know, I'm coming around, you know, a few 24s. So if all I had was, you know, my home group and maybe Staten Island, it's pretty small. We're 17 by 9, so it's not a big place. If all I had was that, I wouldn't still be here. I would have been, I don't know, I'd probably just been tired or bored or whatever. I would have to, you know, just slink into the background. And I think about the people that started with me who are no longer attending meetings. I don't know where they are, but they're not around anymore. They're not, you know, they're not active Al-Anon members. And I'm just so grateful that it's always kept it green for me. You know, the more service that I do, it exposes me, it brings me here to meet new people, to have new experiences. And, you know, the sky's the limit. Just recently, I went back to area service, you know, this commitment I have right now. because I have a plan. It's dangerous. But I do have a plan, and I have talked about it with my service sponsor because she is, she also has a plan, I think. But she helps me, you know, keep it all clear. So the way it is in our area of structure, if you're not active, you know, currently active, you can't run for any positions on the committee. You have to be involved. So I had taken a little hiatus because I was in graduate school from service at, you know, both the groups. So I come back and I'm like, what am I going to do? I really wanted to be the secretary because you can't fall asleep in an assembly meeting or a committee meeting if you're the secretary. You really need to pay attention. You can't get up and fool around in the back and all this kind of stuff, which I used to do with my service sponsor. We'd have little breaks where we'd mental health breaks. But the job was taken. So it was suggested to me that I do this Alateen coordinator. And I'm not big on repeating positions, so I had done this like 15 years ago, and I'm like, I don't really want to do it. But I have this plan. So I have to be involved in service in order to set myself in a position, should I ever retire, that I will be able to do these other things that I have in mind that are service-oriented. And it's so interesting to me that it gives me a purpose, it gives me a direction, it keeps me fresh. It's never boring. You know, I ended that first marriage that I started talking about after 3 years in Al-Anon, and I was on my own, no relationship, for say at least 6 years. It might have been longer than at least 6 years, maybe longer. And that same time frame, interestingly enough, I was like this with my sponsor. She was, what happened? She moved. She moved, and she didn't tell me, and she didn't give me a phone number. So it was like my first clue that I needed the new sponsor. But now I have, you know, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, I guess. So I don't really need a sponsor because nobody's done as much service as me. Look at these people. Who's going to help me out? You know, I have a service sponsor, so I don't really need a sponsor. Blah, blah, blah. 5 years later, I find myself in a ridiculous relationship and thinking, why? Why am I here? What am I doing this for? And so I started pulling away and, you know, doing other things and met somebody out in the world because I learned to have fun in service. It's amazing what you can learn in service. And so I love to dance. So I would go with my girlfriends out dancing. And so we're getting to a certain age. You can't just go to a club with a bunch of teenagers. You have to go to these adult things. And sort of like a meat market, if you've ever had that experience, where once women walk in the door, the guys kind of... But we would go with a, you know, a happy heart and just laugh and dance and have fun. And I ended up meeting my current husband at some of these events. And because I had, you know, I had service now, I got myself a new sponsor, hanging on to my Al-Anon, I really was able to do things differently in this relationship. And what I first noticed, before I even knew he was in AA, because this was not a sober event that we were at, this was, you know, with Earthlings, was that there was something about him that I was drawn to. Things that he would talk about, we just seemed to really click, and I come to find out that he is a member of the other fellowship, deeply involved in service in that fellowship, and I'm like, oh, here, the tie that binds. And it's interesting that some of our most heated discussions are revolving around the traditions and concepts and how they are or are not being applied where we are. So I can say that I would not be who I am today without being involved in service. There's no way. I would be, I don't know what I would be. I can't even guess. But I know that the opportunities are limitless, you know, and that I learned from you guys, that I put my own limitations on my life, that whatever it is that I have in mind is possible, might not be probable, but it is possible. And given time, everything is possible. I never expected to be where I am today. doing the things that I do today. Sometimes I have these out-of-body experiences where I look down and I say, who is that? Who is that? Or better yet, I look back at who I was and say, how sad. How sad. All those years lost, you know, fighting a fight that wasn't mine to fight. You know, and coming in here and finding out that it's really all about me in a good way. And that if I keep the focus on myself and remain teachable and willing to be of service, anything is possible. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ellen. Our next speaker is Drew.
Hello. Hi, my name is Drew, and I am today a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. When I first came into these rooms of Al-Anon, I was not grateful. I was there. I came to my first meeting in October of 1983, around that time, and I came to get my husband sober because, you know, somebody had told me about Al-Anon, and I had been married a year, and I thought that it would be a really good idea if he stopped drinking. So I didn't have any idea what these people were talking about. I just went, and every night I would come home from work and I would say, and being a good Al-Anon, which I didn't know I was at the time, I had it all figured out that I knew exactly where AA meetings were and where, how I could get him there if he said that he wanted to go to one. So I would come home and ask him if he wanted to go to an AA meeting, and he said no. And I said, well, I'm going to an Al-Anon meeting. So I went, and I didn't know what these people were talking about. What they said was like a foreign language to me, and I thought, well, that doesn't have anything to do with me. But I went because I wanted to get him sober. So I did that for a few days, a week or so. And finally he said yes. I found out later he said yes because he got sick and tired of me asking him if I wanted to, he wanted to go to an AA meeting. So I took him, and lo and behold, after a while, he actually went into a rehab, and he went to AA meetings, and he got sober. So I thought, well, this worked. I went to Al-Anon, I took him to AA, and it worked, so I'm done with Al-Anon. So I didn't go to Al-Anon anymore. Then flash forward to 1995, and he decided that he would go out drinking again. And so we had, meanwhile, had two kids, and we raised them, and it was, to say the least, a shock to my system that after 11 and a half years of being sober, he would go and drink. I just went, what? I can't explain how shocking that situation was. Well, he ended up going out drinking for about 3 years, and during that time, it didn't even occur to me to go to Al-Anon, not even one second. I decided that, well, he probably wasn't an alcoholic, or he didn't have a problem drinking. He could drink a little bit, and that was fine. He was a moderate drinker, and I went into, as I know now, into denial. So at the end of that period, he ended up going back into the program of AA, and at that time, this was in 1998, and at that time, I thought, well, maybe it would be a good idea for me to go to Al-Anon for myself. So I did. That was in February of 1998, and I went to a meeting, and it was a meeting on detachment. And what I know is that it was a meeting on detachment. I didn't hear one thing they said. But when I left that meeting, I felt like somebody had taken a huge burden off my shoulders, and I felt this amazing freedom and feeling, and it was just indescribable. And so I decided, well, maybe I'll go back to another meeting. So I kept on going back, and over time I would hear little things, and it started a process. I started my journey through Al-Anon at that time. I would hear, you know, the word service, and my thought was, well, I don't want to do service. I like just going to the meetings and hearing what people have to say and start meeting people and connecting, and then I would, you know, hear the word tradition, and I would go, well, what, I don't know what that is. It sounded kind of strange to me. So I really didn't pay much attention. And if somebody was sharing in the room about, you know, some tradition or even a step that I hadn't done, I would kind of tune out a little bit because I thought, well, that doesn't apply to me. You know, I think back on all this and I go, you know, that was my path, and that was how I needed to do it, and that was fine. At the time, I didn't think I was doing anything, you know, right or wrong. I was just showing up at the meetings. I eventually, after a while, maybe even like 3 years, I don't remember exactly, but I finally decided, I heard the word sponsor. I thought, okay, I'll get a sponsor. I heard the word, you know, work the steps, and I thought, well, I don't want to work these steps. What are these steps? I don't want to do this this work. To me, like service, steps, it all sounded like work, and it didn't sound fun. It didn't sound interesting. It sounded kind of boring. I just wanted to hear what other people had to say and just leave it like that. I was going to Al-Anon meetings. Wasn't that enough? And so eventually I worked the steps with my sponsor, and it took me probably a year, maybe a little longer, to do the steps. I didn't rush through it. She just said, just whenever you're ready to, you know, to talk about, you know, step one, then, you know, we'll get together and we'll talk about step one. When you're ready to talk about step two, we just kind of did it like that. And, you know, it worked really well. We used Paths to Recovery to do that. And I really liked that book. And it gave me it, the questions that they had in it were really, really important to me. And it made me really think about, you know, things that I wouldn't have thought about, a different perspective. So I went through the steps, and when I got to step 12, after a few weeks of after finishing it, I kind of had this, every once in a while I get these light bulb moments in Al-Anon, and that was one of them. I look back on it and I realize it was one of them where I go, oh wow, these steps really make a difference in my life. I would. It was a light bulb moment. What can I say? It was just so amazing. And this is to me, this program is a gift, and one of the gifts are these light bulb moments for me. So I did the steps, and then at that time, I had the opportunity to go to an event called PRASA. Those of you that don't know about PRASA, it's Pacific Region AA Service Assembly. It's an AA event with Al-Anon participation. And the Al-Anon participation is, my experience, I've gone to several since then, is fabulous. It's like the Al-Anon participation here at the International. It's that kind of participation. But it's about service. And anyway, I had the opportunity to go to one in Reno. I'm from Davis, California, so I was over in the Pacific region. So we went up to Reno. I went with my husband, and I went into the Al-Anon rooms there, and I tell you, what I heard there was another light bulb moment, an eye-opener of service. I thought, wow, these people, they're having so much fun. They did skits. They had all these tables with different like literature and outreach and all these different kind of topics, and it was fabulous. And I just went, wow, is this a service? This is what I thought was uninteresting, boring. It was so much fun. So I came away from that having a different perspective about service. I really didn't know that much. I had heard the Triangle Unity Recovery Service, but I hadn't really focused on that, hadn't really thought of it as a complete thing. But I came home from that event, and I started thinking, sort of processing service, and it probably took me a little while after that event. I don't know. I don't remember exactly how long, but at that time, my sponsor was a GR, a group rep for a group, and she said, why don't you come to a district meeting with me? And I went, okay. I don't know what a district meeting is, but okay. So I did, and it was actually really kind of interesting. It was, the people were really nice. It was kind of fun. It was different. I was just kind of amazed at this district meeting, and I just kind of, you know, sat there and listened and watched everybody. And a while after that, I realized that that the group that I went to, my home group, did not have a group rep. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll be a group rep. Now, that is a huge decision for me because, as I said, I had decided I wasn't going to do any service. I didn't want to do service. I was just going to go to Al-Anon and just do other things, but not service. So to actually decide that I was going to possibly do this position of group rep for my group was a huge. I did end up being group rep for that group, and I went to district meetings, and I went to assemblies, and my first assembly, we had so much fun. On the drive there, a group of about five or six women, we were just laughing and laughing. And then we would be at this assembly, and it was just so much fun. And then we'd come home, we would just laugh and laugh. It was just amazingly interesting and fun. It was just such a difference from my small little perspective of what service was that I was really thrilled. I was really happy to know that since I had decided to, you know, try being a group rep. So I would go back to my group and I would give them a little report about assemblies. And I learned over time that they didn't really want to hear a long dialogue about what happened at the assembly. So I would think of two or three things and just bullet points and just say, there's new literature coming out. This is what it is. You know, whatever information came through, I would just do it in that kind of way and then just let it be. Because I started realizing, oh, how fun service was, and how come all you guys aren't involved in service? What's wrong with you people? You know, I mean, what a wonderful experience this is. And I had to remember that I was like that. And that has been a really good reminder for me to remember that I was like that. And it's okay. You know, whatever path they need to work, that's wonderful. Because I was really, really grateful when I look back, and I am now today, that I'm not told how to do my program. And I wasn't told that I had to get into service, that I needed to do this. It was suggested, and I was done. It was done very gently. And I love that about the Al-Anon program. It can be gentle. And for a lot of people, and for me, I needed that gentleness. So I was group rep, and then I decided to be group rep again because nobody stood up. So, you know, I didn't understand rotation at that time. I eventually became alternate DR, district rep, and that was a real eye-opener for service. I started going to committee meetings and really started seeing. I'd already seen some bigger picture with going to PRASA events, but this was it was just amazing to see how everything kind of fit together. All this puzzle of Al-Anon fit together in the service structure with the WSO and group reps and all the people in positions in between, and just, it's just amazing how it functions. If it, you know, with the structure, it's a gift of the program. It's a higher power thing. And so it came time that my alternate DR position was up, and currently, this was last fall, and I thought, well, I don't know if I'm gonna make myself available for DR. Not sure. Wasn't sure. I get there, and I even said this, you know, to my sponsor, to various people, and I don't know if I'm gonna do it. We'll just kind of see what happens at the district meeting and the elections. And so it came time for, everything was filled, and it came time to fill a DR position, and you know, this is where higher power comes in, because several times in my service things, my hand has gone up and I'm kind of going, "Now, what are you doing?" And you know, it was up, and like there I was, DR, because nobody else's hand went up, so there I was. And, you know, one of the beautiful gifts of this program is that I learned how to do my program, my recovery. I learned how to live one day at a time. I learned this when my husband had gotten back into the program, and I looked at him and I went, oh, this is one day at a time. There's no guarantees. I thought we were set when he first got sober. I thought, hey, we were set. We were on our way, and I had no more problems. Well, when that whole situation happened, and then when he got back into the program, I just looked at him and went, oh, my, okay. So I started practicing one day at a time, because as I've told many people, and I will say it again, and I remind myself of this every day, I am not naturally a one-day-at-a-time person. If I can do one day at a time, anybody in the world can do one day at a time, because it is not my instinct. My instinct is to have everything all planned. I know how people are going to be, what they're going to say. You know, I know who's going to sit where, whatever, you know, it might be. And, you know, that might work sometimes, but generally in life, it doesn't really work that way. So when I started practicing one day at a time, it was such a gift to me, because it like removed all this responsibility of other things and other situations that I'm really not, you know, responsible for. And I had this sense of freedom that came over me, because, hey, I just have to deal with what's right here, right now, and that's wonderful. So I did that in my recovery, and over time, it's been 17 and a half years now that I've been in Al-Anon, and over time I have understood that this is the major gift to me. And when I got into service, when I became alternate DR and DR, I said, oh, the only way I can do this position, and my higher power knew this. This is why my higher power put my hand up. I can do this position one day at a time, and I can't do it any other way. I can't do service any other way. And I have an alternate DR, and I said to her, I cannot do this position any other way but one day at a time. So as things come along, I do them as necessary. I don't project ahead of time. I don't try to figure out how somebody's going to do something or not do something in the service in my district or the area or whatever. I show up where I need to show up. I answer emails when I need to. I do the best I can with the information that I have. And when my first district meeting as a DR, That's what I said. And you know, everybody was so, they embraced me and they thought it was wonderful and they were so behind me. And I just was like, wow, if I'm just open and honest and just say what I can do and not do, hey, you know, that's what I love about Al-Anon. Everybody's so accepting and it's wonderful, especially in, maybe more in service, I'm not sure, or people with, you know, different kind of experiences all coming together. And another gift of the program that I've gotten from service is, the people that I have met, the connections I've made. And it's just so wonderful to go to an assembly or a committee meeting and see these people again that I haven't seen for a few weeks or a few months. And it's like old home week, you know, all the time. And it's wonderful. I get wonderful hugs. I get to give wonderful hugs and say, how are you? You know, go out to lunch and, you know, just stuff like that. And that is a truly amazing experience that I get from doing service. I don't know where my service is going, you know, from this point. I've just started on this, you know, this next panel, which is 3 years, so we'll see what happens, you know. I'm not in charge, and I'm just going day by day and doing what I need to do. Something that that I also have gotten back from the program, from doing all three of the Unity, Recovery, and Service, is I've gotten balance in my life again, and I've gotten a freedom to be myself. Because I think me got lost in the mix of the whole disease during those years and the past years before I got into Al-Anon, and I just kind of lost myself. I kind of went into denial, and I went a different way, and I look back and I realize what I did, and I realize what this program has given me back. I can say and do what I need to say and do. And, you know, I'm not responsible for the response. If I don't like the response, well, that's fine. I don't have to stay and hear it. I can leave. I can refocus. I can, you know, I have choices. That I wasn't given, that I didn't think I had from before. So that, you know, they're just constant gifts that I'm getting from this program. Something that, you know, there's a book, Language of the Heart, and it truly is a language of the heart, because I have the opportunity to go to international places, different countries, every so often, and I don't understand the language necessarily, and I can't understand. I've gone to Al-Anon rooms where I don't understand what they're saying, but you know what? There's a feeling. There's the language of the heart that I feel in that room. And it's powerful. And I love that about the program. Just like here at the International, there's people from all over the world, and it's powerful. If anybody that was in that dome last night, I tell you, that feeling was powerful. I don't know how much time I have. I'm just going to wrap it up with a quote that I had. I had this little pad in my purse, and I wrote this down. I don't even know where I heard this, but I love the Serenity Prayer because I like the whole what it says about, and I used it in my first few months of going to Al-Anon. If I needed to really, like, do something, I would just sit in some chair and just say the Serenity Prayer over and over and over again because I needed that. And in it talks about change. So I saw this quote that I'd written. I just went, wow. So I'm going to read that quote because, it just kind of fits with my how I do the program and what works for me. And what it is change is not a future event. It's a present activity. And like I said, I don't know where I heard that, but I heard it at some event, probably maybe an assembly or somewhere. And it to me, it was like, Yes, see, I was willing. I was willing to change. I was willing to do service. I was willing to take this path, this journey of Al-Anon. And because of that, I'm given one day at a time, and I'm given these wonderful gifts of the program, and I'm allowed to change if I need to in the present. I like the quote, you know, the present is a gift. That's why it's called a present. And I love that because I'm really focused on one day at a time. For me, that's how I do my program. That's how I do service. And it has expanded my recovery amazingly. So thank you very much for listening and for this opportunity.
Thank you, Drew. And our next speaker is Palmer.
Hello, y'all. My name is Palmer Graves. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I came into this fellowship March 5th of 1990, and for that time, I am so incredibly grateful. My home group is the Kendall Stepping Up group in Miami, Florida. Yeah, we've got people here. Thank you for coming. Expanding our recovery through service, I think in order to understand how my recovery came through service, I need to go back and tell you what it was like and what happened and what I'm like today. Not what it was like, what I was like. I'm an Al-Anon because I have an adverse reaction to alcoholism and alcoholics. And you know, the first time, I mean, I was just lost. I did not know what I wanted. I was so full of fear that I couldn't talk to two people at the same time. I couldn't talk to you one-on-one. I'm just in fear, steeped in fear. And I didn't know what to do. And I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I just could not relate, and I couldn't be at peace anywhere. And so I was playing music in this coffee house. I know it's that's kind of strange. I can't talk to you, but I can sing and play guitar. So I was playing there, and it was kind of, for the young people, it was not Starbucks. It was an old, dark, smoky coffee house. Really, the only difference is we didn't have internet, Wi-Fi. So, but I was there, and she walked in the door, and you know, she got my attention immediately. And so I stopped playing about after another song or two and went over and talked to her. And 5 minutes later, we quartered each other. 5 minutes later, we moved in together. Yeah, I've come to find out that that's an abnormal reaction, that normal people wouldn't do that. And indeed, you know, she was a drinker and a drugger and an alcoholic and I didn't mind that because I didn't understand. I've never been exposed to alcoholism. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anything about it. And I'm okay with drinking and doing all the rest of the stuff with her because that's what she wants to do. When I met her, I had this sense of ease and comfort that came from being with her. And I didn't understand that. I couldn't have vocalized or verbalized that. All I knew was that all of a sudden, I was comfortable in my own skin, and everything was okay, as I had her. And so we took off into the sunset and proceeded down this journey through the family disease of alcoholism, and it is a downhill slide, and it gets worse and worse. And I slid into this sense of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I was always trying to fix her. Now, I didn't understand why. I thought I was trying to fix her because I was being noble, or I was trying to save her life, or you know, whatever I was putting in the slot for that day as an excuse. But really what it was is I was trying to retrieve that 5 minutes where I was at peace and comfortable. I had that sense of ease and comfort that came from being with her. I was trying to retrieve that, and I didn't know that. It took a lot of inventory on my part to get to that point. I did weird stuff, like when she was not acting like she was supposed to act, I would go out and do drive-by sightings. In fact, one time she had the car and was up at the lake, so what do? I jump on my tractor and go up and do this drive-by sighting to find her, to see what she was doing, with whom she was doing it. Now, it was dark. There was no moonlight. It was hairpin turns down this mountain in Oklahoma, and I had to go see what she was doing. And I pulled up to the lake, no muffler, and I thought I was being sneaky, and I drove in, and there was nobody there. Now, my mind says, okay, they're gone, or they were never here. I don't know. You know, they may have been out in the weeds laughing at me because I was so obvious. I mean, they heard me coming from a half a mile away if they were there. But you see, I've got this disease of perception, and I thought, it's okay. They're not here. It didn't occur to me, where is she? It's just my mind was, I'm insane, just crazy. And I didn't know that. I thought I was being normal. I thought this was the only normal life. I didn't know what was going on. And so it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And you know, finally, people kept telling me, you gotta go to Al-Anon. Palmer, you've gotta go to Al-Anon. I wasn't ready yet. But I started going because of more stuff that was going on. And I was sitting in, I was on this cot, and she was standing over me with a butcher knife. She said, Palmer, you're going to have to go to sleep sometime when you do your dead man. And I just rolled over and went to sleep. I had achieved this sense or reached this point of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, and I didn't know what else. I just wanted the pain to stop. I didn't know. I mean, I didn't necessarily want her to sober up. I didn't know what I wanted, except I want the pain to stop. And so I walked in Al-Anon. And when I got to you, I was just a broken human being. There were only women. Guys didn't go to Al-Anon then. I mean, that's not true. There were men in Al-Anon, but I didn't know that. My experience was, there were just women in Al-Anon. And I thought, you don't know what it's like to be a man living in this thing. And one of the old-timers pulled me aside and stuck her finger in my chest and said, Palmer, listen for similarities, not differences. And I did. Now, so that's what I bring to you. That's what I bring to the table. Just a broken human being, incapable of having a relationship with another human being, full of fear, just absolutely broken. You know, terror, bewilderment, despair, and frustration just all over me. And so I walk in. And after a meeting or two, they started saying, the first thing they did was say, why don't you wash ashtrays? Okay. Now, you know, I don't understand the problem, and I certainly don't understand how washing ashtrays is going to help my problem. It just makes no sense. But yet I was to the point of surrender, and I'd given up. And I'd say, you know, help me. God help me. And I took the job. Now, so what did that do for me, washing ashtrays? Well, I had to be there every meeting because they couldn't smoke without me washing their ashtrays. I tell you, I've got a disease of perception, but I thought this was an important job. So I was the ashtray washer. And you know, it's a nasty job. You know, everybody smoked back then. And even if you didn't smoke, you smoked because it was the air was so thick. I was in one meeting one time. This is an aside. It was so funny. They had the room split right down the middle. Smokers on this side, non-smokers over on this side. Really? I mean, you know, smoke was just so thick. But anyway, that was my job. And I did that for a couple months, and then they promoted me to a coffee cup washer. You know, those old nasty porcelain coffee cups, and I washed those. And so, you know, I had a new job, and I had to be there. And I remember one time I've been there, I don't know, maybe 9 months. It wasn't long. And they gave me a key to the room. And now this was a room where you had AA, Al-Anon, Alateen, Al-Dog, Al-Cat. The whole business was there working. and AA trusted me with a key. You know, that was phenomenal. Well, what was going on with me is as I was doing these jobs, I started becoming comfortable a little bit with you. It started building a bridge between me, this broken guy, and the rest of the fellowship. And I found a place, kind of. I was still so afraid that I couldn't talk a lot, but I'd sit with you and I'd wash your ashtrays and I'd wash your coffee cups and I'd come in before the meeting and start setting up chairs, making coffee, setting up for the meeting. I'd been there for a couple years and my grand sponsor came in and she said, "Palmer, you're a greeter." Okay, what's a greeter? And she said, "I want you to be there 30 minutes before the meeting starts and shake people's hand and welcome to the meeting." I don't do that, you know, but you don't argue with her. You say, "Yes, ma'am," right? So I said, "Yes, ma'am," and I started showing up 30 minutes. And I'd look at the floor when I'd shaken your hand, you know, "Welcome down, and I'm glad you're here." Best I could do. You know, I was so full of fear. Best I could do. Well, after 3-4 weeks of being there greeting, my eyes started coming up. And I started looking at you. And I started being really glad that you were there. You know, the action started. I was saying, "I'm glad you're here," looking at the floor. I didn't mean it. I didn't believe it. I didn't want to be saying it. But I took the action, and as I took the action, the feeling started to develop, and I was glad you were there. I'm so grateful that when I came in, they didn't care how I felt or what I wanted to do. I mean, why would I know what was good for me to do? I have no clue. I had to surrender and take direction from a sponsor and sponsorship, and because I don't know. I don't know what I need to do. All I know is I want the pain to stop. I don't even know what, you know, she was doing what she was doing, and our relationship ended then, and so I was just in Al-Anon and just doing what I was supposed to do. I did get into service. They tricked me too, like you, and said, you know, "We need an alternate GR." And I said, "Gee, what do I do with that?" And they said, "Dad, don't worry about it. You just come to assembly and I'll show you." And I went to my first assembly and the GR, she said, "I'm in the wrong room. I'm an alcoholic, so that I can't be GR. You're GR." And gee, thanks. I became GR. And then after a couple of years, I was at an assembly, and they said, "Is anybody here from District 16? And I said, "Yeah." They said, "Well, you're the new DR because your DR can't do it." So I became DR. I was a bad one. I mean, I did the best I knew how to do, but I was so new. I was so afraid I couldn't do a really good job. But, I mean, I did what I could, and I guess I did fine. I don't know. I'm not the best judge of what I do or don't do. So, I did that. We moved to, started courting another gal and we got married and darn if we didn't get on our honeymoon and she said, "Gosh, she drinks a lot." You know? I'm an Al-Anon guy and I just like alcoholics, you know? And so I had me another one. My sponsor kids me and says, "You know, you're a carrier. You infected her. Most of the time you can't, you don't cause it, can't cure it, and can't control it, but we'll make an exception for you," so. So I made her alcoholic. But anyway, and we moved to Florida. You know, I finished a graduate degree also. And I did that because of what you taught me one day at a time. And in the service work that I'd done, I learned how to do graduate school. And I don't know where that came from. I mean, I can observe it now, but I just did the next right thing. And my sponsor said, "You're going to turn that fellowship down? They're going to pay you to go to school, and you're thinking about turning it down." It's like, "Hey, yeah, that doesn't seem like a very good idea, does it?" And so I went to graduate school, and I finished it. And my wife and I went down to Florida, and I got a job. I'm on the faculty of a university, my wife was still drinking, and I got into service there. Now, When I arrived in Miami, they needed a secretary at AIS. They needed an alternate GR, so I took that. And then I got to up to the AIS, because that's where the alternate goes. You may call it intergroup in where your area of the country, but it was Allen on Information Service in Miami. And I became, I was there, and they said, we need somebody to be a secretary. I listened to that for 2 months, and I finally said, well, you know, I just got out of school. I can take notes. So I became the secretary at AIS. And you know, I loved that, because what happened by me being in service was I became a part of Miami Al-Anon. I became a part of the fellowship down there. Once again, doing service has taken me into the middle of you, where, I mean, you're where I find God. Because, you know, that's where He expresses Himself or herself or whatever to guys like me, is because I have to hear it from you. God in human skin. I don't get it elsewhere. So I was part of the service structure in Al-Anon. But, you know, for me, I've been all the way up to, you know, area and regional service. And it was time for me to rotate out. And I think that the reason why is that, our 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So for me, service went to another level, and that's just carrying the message to others. And you know, I'm back at the front door greeting at my meeting. I love greeting, because when the newcomer comes through looking like me, feeling like I did when I walk in, there's a hand there saying, welcome, I'm glad you're here. My sponsor told me one time that service work makes good 12-step work possible. And I think for me that's true, and I don't mean that in any way to belittle service work at area, region, world service, whatever. I mean, that's good stuff. But it's not what I'm called to do. You know, I've done it. Where I like being is right there when the newcomer walks in the door feeling like just mush. I mean, you know, that feeling of being lower than whale poop on the bottom of the ocean floor. I understand that feeling, and I can welcome them and say, you know, I understand. I've been there. Those are the magic words that we have to offer the newcomers. I understand. Because we do. We've been there. And, you know, I hear a lot of stuff coming out of, psychology treatment, therapy and all that. And the thing that they cannot say with meaning is, I understand. I've been there. Let me show you what I did that pulled me out of that feeling. I love that level of service. And I love taking people through the steps. Because for me, that's where my recovery came from. I love the fellowship. I love you. But my recovery came through the steps. Because you see, I suffer from a spiritual malady. I didn't know that. I couldn't have put that word to it. I couldn't have said that when I walked in the door. And yet, people took me through the steps and took me up to where we could say the third step prayer. And I'm saying, I don't do God. You know, I don't do that. And they said, well, are you willing to believe? Do you believe, or are you willing to believe? And I said, well, yeah, I'm willing. And so we took the third step prayer. And as I took the third step prayer and went through the inventory and the fifth step, and it's like, oh, gosh, I don't want to do a fifth step. I knew that if I told people about the fifth step, they would kick me out of Al-Anon. Because you didn't know what I had really done. And my sponsor laughed and said, yeah, that stuff, man, that's just garden variety Al-Anon stuff. And you know, it's what I thought was so terribly bad was just general stuff, you know. I don't know. So, and as I went on, as I made my amends to the world, everybody that I had hurt, I experienced the miracle. I had abandoned my mother, dying of cancer, when I was a young guy. And I had just gone off to, I was selfish and self-centered, and I'd walked off into the sunset to go to Virginia Beach, and I'd left her. And, state police came and found me, and they said, you need to call home, and I called, and they were just coming in from her funeral. I wasn't there. I wasn't a brother. I wasn't a son. I wasn't anybody. Because I was off on my own. And yet, going through the steps, I was able to, get to the ninth step, and of course my mom was on there. So I went down to the cemetery in Los Alamos, Mexico, and I was reading this letter I had written to her. And I cried, and I cleaned up the grave, and I cried, and I read, and I talked to her. And I came up out of the canyon. And the first person I ran into was my mom's dearest friend. And she said, Palmer, what were you doing today? And I said, I was just hanging out, Becky. And she said, no, really, Palmer, what were you doing today? And I said, Becky, I was hanging out. I went to the cemetery. She said, Palmer, what were you doing today? Her question was just bizarre. And I said, Becky, I had to make amends to Mom. And so she started laughing at me. Not what I expected, but she laughed. And she said, Palmer, I was with your mother the day that you left, and she was overjoyed and happy that you were leaving because she didn't want you to see her dying. You know, that's one of the miracles of the step for me, because just like that, that guilt that I carried was removed. How do I express gratitude and appreciation for that miracle? I mean, it was a miracle. I could not have organized that if I had tried. The only way that I know to say thank you and express gratitude is to be there when the newcomer walks through the door and say, I am so glad you're here. Here's what I did. I went through these steps, these 12 steps, and I came to, I have a new freedom. I intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. The promises, if you don't know the promises, the AA promises, go to page 83 in the big book, and they are just incredibly beautifully written. And they have happened for me because of working through these steps. And so service for me is being able to pass that on to the new guy that comes walking through the door. And I absolutely love that, and to be able to do that. What it's like today, I'm in Miami. And, my wife sobered up, and she's got 16 years sobriety. And I absolutely love being a member of Al-Anon. You know, I'm active. I'm at my group, whether, you know, no matter what, I'm there. Well, except for Thursday. We were up here. But, you know, if I'm out on the road doing something, then, you know, the people know that I'm out talking or doing something for Al-Anon. My sponsor one time said, I was whining about having to go to so many meetings and everything, and he said, Palmer, think about this. If you had to go to, kidney dialysis, would you skip your dialysis because you wanted to go to watch a TV show or something? And I said, well, gosh, no. And he said, well, think of this as your spiritual dialysis. I like that image because as I sit in meetings with you, I get all that stuff that builds up filtered out of me, and I have again restored or my spiritual condition for the day. But I've got this mind which comes back and tells me, well, you know, it chatters at me. And so I have to come sit with you again and again. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity. How much time we got? 2 minutes. Okay. I want to close with, I was at a funeral for the father of a dear friend of mine. And the minister was talking about grace. And I didn't know what grace was about, so I went to a piece of unconference-approved literature, the Webster's Dictionary, and I looked it up. And it says, unmerited divine assistance given man for his sanctification or regeneration. I don't know what that means. I mean, I know what regeneration means because I've been regenerated, I've been made anew today. But I didn't know what sanctification meant, so I looked it up also in Webster's Dictionary, and it says to be set free. You know, that's what you have done for me. You have taken a broken human being who came in with nothing and have taught me and cleaned me up and saved me and removed everything from me and put me back together as a human being that I could never have been on my own. Absolutely could not have been here. I could not stand here in front of you today as I am without you, the steps, sponsorship, and the fellowship. I'm so grateful to be here, and thank you for my life.